To be able to predict the future has been the dream of humanity for as long as it has existed. Fuzzy inductive reasoning is one technique that attempts at making this dream a reality. The presentation talks about a use of fuzzy inductive reasoning for predicting economic variables, in particular U.S. food demand in the 20th century. The three authors of this presentation are Mukund Murthy, a graduate student of mine, myself, François Cellier. I'm a professor with the University of Arizona Electrical and Computer Engineering Department, and Jeff LaFrance, who is now a professor with the Department of Agricultural and Resource Economics at the University of California, Berkeley. Jeff was at the U of A until very recently. The project presented here was supported by the Department of Defense, and there were actually more people in the team. Larry Schooley, another professor in my department, who was responsible for telecommunication technologies. Les Taylor of the Department of Economy, and Ed Zajac from Political Economy, as well as Bart Wilburn, all professors. Bart was is with the Optical Sciences Center here at the University of Arizona. The presentation mixes a deductive and an inductive modeling technique to get the best of both worlds. System dynamics is being used as the deductive modeling technique, and fuzzy inductive reasoning is the inductive modeling technique. Let us talk first about system dynamics. System dynamics, originally invented by Jay Forrester at MIT in the 60s, distinguishes between two major types of variables, so-called levels and rates. Levels correspond to what engineers call state variables. They are things that accumulate, like population, money, frustration, love, tumor cells, inventory on stock, and knowledge. Rates are the variables that influence the growth or decay of the levels, like the population is positively influenced by birth rate and negatively influenced by death rate. Money accumulation is positively influenced by income and negatively by expenses, and so on. The rate variables need to be modeled in the same way as engineers model state equations, essentially making models for the derivatives of the state variables. For instance, the birth rate might be influenced by population, the material standard of living, food quality and quantity, the level of education, availability of contraceptives, and religious beliefs, to mention only the most important factors. System dynamics calls these factors a laundry list. Essentially, the levels themselves can be translated into state equations. For instance, the derivative of population with respect of time is the sum of birth rate and immigration rate minus the sum of death rate and emigration rate. This equation is certainly correct. It is not an approximation in any sense. The laundry list is then used to create a functional relationship between influencing factors, which themselves can be levels, rates, or auxiliary variables, like the example for the birth rate given before. So far, so good. System dynamics then goes about to simplify the expression by taking a normal birth rate out, assuming that the birth rate is proportional to the population, which may be correct, and then assuming that all the other factors are independent of each other, that is, essentially modeling a small signal behavior around an operating point, assuming that the different influencing factors do not influence each other. This final assumption was made by Forrester in order to make modeling possible, because he wouldn't have had enough data to make a more complex model. Yet, the assumption is certainly not justified by any means. Modeling methodologies in general can be separated into two broad classes, knowledge-based approaches and pattern-based approaches. Knowledge-based approaches, such as system dynamics, are based on meta-knowledge that allows to say something about the structure of the system from which the data are extracted, and that is to be modeled. We may distinguish between deep models and shallow models. Deep models essentially modeling the structure and then deriving behavior, shallow models going directly after the input-output behavior. But essentially, they are based on meta-knowledge, and where such meta-knowledge is available, this, of course, is a good approach. Pattern-based approaches, on the other hand, rely directly on data, on measurements, and try to extract patterns from repeated observation of the same input-output behavior. There are two major classes. Neural networks are widely used, and inductive reasoners, the technique advocated in this presentation. Among the inductive reasoners, fuzzy inductive reasoning, FIR, which in the context of this presentation does not mean finite impulse response. Inductive modeling techniques are used to help understand systems, help forecast their behavior, and eventually help control their behavior, just like deductive modeling techniques. The difference is that models here are made from observations of input-output behavior alone, rather than relying on meta-knowledge. Comparing deductive and inductive modeling techniques, we can say that the deductive modeling techniques, that means techniques based on meta-knowledge, have a larger degree of validity in many different and even previously unknown applications. That means, as long as the meta-knowledge is correct, we can apply such models to situations that have never been seen before. However, they are often quite imprecise in their predictions due to inherent model inaccuracy, so-called unmodeled dynamics. The inductive modeling techniques, on the other hand, have a much more limited degree of validity and can certainly only be applied to predict behavior of systems that are essentially known. That means it is only possible to interpolate among made observations, not extrapolate beyond them. On the other hand, they are often amazingly precise in their predictions if applied carefully, because there aren't any unmodeled dynamics, since the model is derived directly from observations of real system behavior. Ultimately, we can say that there really only exist inductive models, because deductive modeling essentially means that someone else has already made the model in an inductive fashion. That means someone must have created the meta-knowledge that is used for the deductive modeling. More comparisons now among the two classes of inductive modelers, namely the neural networks and the inductive reasoners. Neural networks are mostly quantitative in nature. What that means is that they operate directly on the measurement data as they were obtained. The inductive reasoners are qualitative in nature, which means that real-valued measurements are first discretized, and reasoning is then done in discrete classes rather than using the real measurement data. Neural networks are essentially parametric in nature. What that means is that the model itself uses a essentially arbitrary structure and then has a lot of parameters that are fit to explain the behavior that has been observed. Inductive reasoners are non-parametric, meaning that they never make any assumption about the structure, but always go directly back to the measurement data that were used for training. Neural networks, because of their parametric nature, are more adaptive because it is easy to adjust the parameter values on the fly. Fuzzy inductive reasoners have a much more limited degree of adaptability. Because neural networks operate on the quantitative real-valued data, their training can be painfully slow. Since fuzzy inductive reasoning reasons about qualitative classes, actually very coarse qualitative classes, their training can be very fast and actually can be a synthesis procedure. Neural networks offer smooth interpolation, fuzzy inductive reasoners less so, but if used carefully can offer quite decent interpolation. Neural networks, because of their parametric nature, allow wild extrapolations. This is dangerous. Fuzzy inductive reasoners essentially do not allow any extrapolation at all. Neural networks do not offer usually an error estimate, whereas fuzzy inductive reasoners have a methodology for estimating the error of the prediction inherently built in. Therefore, neural networks are unsafe at any speed, they're gullible, whereas fuzzy inductive reasoners, if applied correctly, can be made quite robust and self-critical. Fuzzy inductive reasoning contains four main engines. First, there is a fuzzification or fuzzy recoding engine that essentially takes quantitative measurement data and discretizes it. Rather than saying that the temperature in Tucson today is 97 degrees, we would say it is darn hot. There is a qualitative modeling engine that then reasons about discrete categories and tries to identify input-output patterns. There is a qualitative simulation engine that then uses these patterns to make predictions about an output given a new input pattern. And there is a defuzzification or fuzzy regeneration engine that is the inverse of the fuzzy recoding that essentially interpolates between neighboring classes using the fuzzy information preserved in the fuzzification. Because of the way fuzzy inductive reasoning operates, fuzzy inductive reasoning can be mixed with quantitative models easily. The purple boxes shown in this graph show two quantitative subsystems that operate on quantitative, i.e. real-valued input and output data. The green recode box corresponds to something in a way like an A to D converter that takes the real-valued data and makes so-called fuzzy triples out of them. I'll talk more about that in a little while. The green regenerate box is the inverse box that takes qualitative triples and makes quantitative data out of them. the yellow boxes are the fuzzy inductive reasoning qualitative models that use qualitative triples both as inputs and outputs to reason with them. Here is a successful application that we did in the past. This is a mixed quantitative qualitative model of the cardiovascular system. The hemodynamics, essentially how the blood flows through the vessels and the heart, are quite well understood because they operate essentially just like hydraulic systems with pumps and valves. On the other hand, the central nervous system control that dictates why the blood flows through the vessels at the heart, at what rate the heart beats, how much the it contracts, and so on, is much less well understood and is modeled here by five separate fuzzy inductive reasoning models that use the keratite sinus blood pressure as their input and produce control variables, two for the heart and three for the circulatory flow dynamics, that are then used again in the quantitative model. The top graph here shows a so-called Valsalva maneuver, which is a stress test. The continuous curve is the real observed data, which contains a high frequency oscillation and a much lower frequency oscillation, which is the reaction to the stress test. The dashed curve is the prediction that FIR makes, and it's actually quite good. However, in the central portion around the sample 300, it is less good than, for instance, at the beginning or the end. Below are two different measures of error estimates made by the fuzzy inductive reasoner, a proximity measure and a similarity measure. Both measures show a value of 1 if they're confident that they're essentially predicting the right thing, and a much reduced confidence if they think that they might be goofing up. It is quite evident that both measures are aware that potentially something is bad in the central portion, as it actually is. And one can notice that the similarity measure is a little more sensitive. In one place, the confidence decays down to a value of 0.6. And here in the central portion, it's on average somewhere around 0.9. Here, another simulation was done with a slightly different algorithm. This time, the prediction is almost perfect. No longer is there any mistake in the prediction. And interestingly enough, both the proximity and the similarity measure reflect that, because they now are much more confident, and even in the central portion, the average value of confidence is almost 1.0. And the lowest value that the similarity measure ever obtains is somewhere around 0.8, but most of the time it is very close to 1. Making predictions is easy. It's as easy as throwing a dice. That is not the problem. The problem is to know how good the predictions are, which is, the real problem is not to predict the output. The real problem is to estimate the error of the prediction of the output. A modeling and simulation methodology that doesn't assess its own error is essentially worthless. Now, notice that modeling the error can only be done in a statistical sense, because otherwise the error could be subtracted from the prediction, leading to a prediction without the error, which obviously cannot be done if all information had been used in the modeling in the first place. Fuzzy inductive reasoning operates in the following way. Let us say we have here a variable that represents systolic blood pressure, and a value, a numerical value of 135, is recoded into the class normal with a fuzzy membership value of 0.89 and a side value of right, because it's to the right of the peak of that bell-shaped curve. Thus, a single quantitative value is recoded into a triple consisting of a class, a membership, and a side value. The class and the side value are multi-valued, whereas the membership value is still real-valued, but now normalized in the range 0.5 to 1. Most fuzzy logic systems really use qualitative tuples rather than triples, ignoring the side value and instead using tail information. That means 135 would be either normal with a membership value of 0.89 or high with a membership value of maybe 0.2. We don't do that. We essentially throw the information contained in the tails away. So in our case, this really is simply a nonlinear map. It's a nonlinear recoding code. Once we have our qualitative model, the classes can be represented by integers like 1 meaning low, 2 meaning medium, 3 meaning high. We now need to create a model that somehow relates inputs with with the output that is to be modeled. To that end, we use a so-called mask. The mask picks out the most important input values at different points in time and relates them to the corresponding output. So, for instance, here we would say that the output at time t is a function of the input 3 at time t minus 2 delta t, the input 2 at time t minus delta t, the output itself at time t minus delta t, and the input 1 at time t. How we find the optimal mask is by essentially trying to optimize the Shannon entropy or the information content from the input to the output. So once we have now a pattern, 1, 2, 3, 1 in this case, 1, 2, 3, 1, then we will go into our database of previously observed patterns and find that 1, 2, 3, 1 was observed only once with associated an output of 3, and therefore we will predict that also now the output is 3. We will do the same thing with the side value, but for the fuzzy membership value, we'll do it a little differently. We will pick the 5 nearest neighbors in the input space, look at their fuzzy membership values, and interpolate in the output space to come up with a prediction of the fuzzy membership. Let us now look at the application at hand, namely food demand modeling. The way we tackled the problem was by subdividing the modeling task into 3 layers. The top layer is the population layer. Here we will make predictions about the future population, because more people will need more food, and so that seems to be important information. The medium layer represents the state of the economy. In this particular case, represented by 2 state variables or 2 level variables, namely the number of jobs available and the amount of money available. The bottom layer then is the application layer, in this particular case, the amount of food to be consumed. The variables that look like valves here are the rate variables that control the levels in the square boxes, which are the levels, and the round boxes around are auxiliary variables that may influence rate variables in one way or the other, such as war may influence both birth rate and death rate. The government can control job creation, lending rates, which indirectly influences job creation and job losses. It can print money and it can recall money. The jobs will somehow determine unemployment, which will in turn influence inflation, which will influence food prices and so on. Here is shown the curve of toddlers in the US between the year 1900 and 1995. Essentially, it is a growing curve, except for two periods when this was not true, namely in the late 20s and early 30s during the big recession. So here the economy influenced the number of newborns. And then again in the 60s and early 70s, which was on the one hand during the time of the Vietnam War, when many potential fathers were out of the country and could not sire children in the US. But on the other hand, of course, it was also the time after the development of the pill, which probably was the more important factor. Now we want to use the data from 1900 to 1970 to make a model and then use that model to predict the data from 1970 till 1995. Predicting growth functions is not possible directly with fuzzy inductive reasoning for the reasons that I mentioned earlier, namely that fuzzy inductive reasoning cannot extrapolate, only interpolate. We thus use a small trick. If we assume that the population essentially grows exponentially, we could say that the change of population with respect to time is some factor k times the population. If we allow k to be itself a function of time, then we can model the actual population dynamics that is not exactly exponential. The derivative dp by dt can be approximated by first differences. And now the formula can be solved for k of t, or now in the discretized version, k of n. Now, we can assume that k will be essentially stationary. That means, whereas the population is a growth function, k itself is not. And therefore, we can use fuzzy inductive reasoning to predict the next value of k, given the current value of k, the population at time t, the value of k at time t minus delta t, the population at time t minus delta t, and so on. Once we have found k n plus 1, we can essentially plug that into the above equation, now solved for pn plus 1, shifted by one point into the future, providing the formula for pn plus 1, which is the model that we are going to use. Here, the blue curve is the actual measurement between 1970 and 1995. The green curve is the prediction that Fur makes if it predicts always exactly 1 year ahead. This prediction, of course, is pretty good, because in 1 year, the population doesn't change very much. The red curve is a prediction always 3 years into the future, and the dotted curve is a prediction always 5 years into the future. That already is more difficult. Below, you can see the error as a function of the number of years predicted into the future. Like, if we only predict 1 year into the future, the error is around 0.15%. However, if we predict 5 years into the future, the error will be 0.8% using whatever formula for the error. Here we now model the macroeconomy. We may need a forecast of the amount of dollars spent on food per person per year. This is a essentially growth function that can be used as a measure of inflation in a first approximation. We now made two different models. One model in which the error, amount of food was estimated only on its own past, and another model in which the population dynamics were used as a secondary input to dictate or determine the food usage. And in the curve below, it can be seen that if we predict over a certain number of years, that consistently the model that makes use of the population dynamics as a secondary input has a much smaller error than the model that only predicts food consumption, food prices on the basis of their own past. Forecast of unemployment rate is more difficult because unemployment rate essentially is a controlled variable. How that works is the U.S. government likes the unemployment rate to be not below 5%, because otherwise there is too much of a risk of inflation. Therefore, what they do is if the unemployment rate grows too high, then they cut the lending rates, which will give more incentive for building houses, which will employ more people directly and then indirectly, which reduces the unemployment rate. Once the unemployment rate is sufficiently low, lending rate can be increased in order to prevent the unemployment rate from going too low. Again, two models were made, one only basing unemployment rate on its own past, the other one basing unemployment rate on the estimate of the inflation on the population and its own past. Again, the model that contains more input variables carries a smaller error. Now the last layer, food demand and supply. Here we try to predict the consumption of fresh milk and cream, which decreased almost constantly throughout the last 20 years. The same trick was used as for the population dynamics in order to make a prediction using FIR possible. And again, the model that only predicts the consumption on the basis of its own past carries a much larger error than uses population dynamics and economy as secondary variables. Applications that we have been dealing with in the past, I already talked about the cardiovascular system. We also did some work in predicting the depth of anesthesia during surgery. We did some quite successful work predicting shrimp growth for a semi-intensive shrimp farm in northern Mexico. We predicted water demand in the cities of Barcelona and Rotterdam. We designed a fuzzy controller for tanker ship steering. We looked at the problem of fault monitoring in nuclear power plants. And finally, we made predictions about changes in technologies in the telecommunications sector. Three dissertations were already completed. The first one was by Angela Nebot. It was written in English. Angela was one of my students in Barcelona. Actually, all of these are students in Barcelona. Angela finished a dissertation on qualitative modeling and simulation of biomedical systems using fuzzy inductive reasoning. She worked on the cardiovascular and the anesthesiology model. Paco Mujica, he finished in 1995 a dissertation written in Spanish, Diseño Sistemático de Controladores Difusos Usando Razonamiento Inductivo. He worked on the systematic design of fuzzy controllers. Alvaro de Albornoz, 1996, finished again a dissertation in English, Inductive Reasoning and Reconstruction Analysis, two complementary tools for qualitative fault monitoring of large-scale systems. He worked on airplane modeling and nuclear power plants. Fina Lopez is finishing her dissertation now on qualitative modeling and simulation of time series. And there is one more student in the work, Sebastian Medina, who tries to use knowledge generalization approaches to reduce the databases that FIRM produces, which can be quite formidable. Lots of publications have already been obtained. A primary publication is my book from 1991 on continuous system modeling. Chapter 13 introduces the methodology. 1996, we had a paper in the International Journal of General Systems. 1998, the paper was published in, again, showing the progress in the methodology in computer programs and algorithms in biomedicine. We are currently editing a special issue of the International Journal of General Systems, and a lot of, or actually all of the publications can be found on my website. Conclusions. Fuzzy inductive reasoning offers an exciting alternative to neural networks for modeling systems from observations of behavior. In general, whenever neural networks work well, so will the fuzzy inductive reasoners. But fuzzy inductive reasoners are more robust when used correctly. Fuzzy inductive reasoning offers a model synthesis rather than a model learning approach. It is therefore quite fast in setting up models. Very importantly, fuzzy inductive reasoning offers a self-assessment feature, which is easily the most important characteristic of the methodology. And finally, fuzzy inductive reasoning is a quite practical tool with many industrial applications. Contrary to most other qualitative modeling techniques, such as naive physics, FIR doesn't suffer from scale-up problems, or at least not to the same extent.